Calling all benders and non-benders alike. Jump into the epic world of Avatar with your favorite podcast, Avatar Braving the Elements. Hosted by me, Janet Varney.
And me, Dante Bosco. Each week we'll recap and discuss a new episode.
So come join us and our amazing guests, from creators to cast to superfans, to chat about all things Avatarverse.
It's Fire Nation time. Book of Fire. Let's go. Listen to Avatar Braving the Elements
wherever you get your podcasts.
You guys all know how much I'm into the Australian death metal scene, and there's this great band from Brisbane that was founded after the dissolution of the classic death metal act, Cadaverine. You guys, I don't need to tell you this. And that band I'm referring to is named Disentomb. And we listen to them all the time right here in the Doom Room. I'm Alex, and I'm doomed.
Spaceships go vroom vroom, boom boom, you're in the Doom Room. I'm Justin, and I'm doomed.
Hi, I'm Pete.
You're so thrown by that intro, you completely forgot.
You go high, I go low, Alex. Yeah. That's how it works.
I appreciate it because I was like, oh, something about spaceships. What could it do about spaceships? And you nailed it. Great job, buddy.
Great job, you, on the Brisbane, Australia hardcore scene.
Hey, that's great. Well, I think we could wrap the podcast here. We pretty much covered it. Just kidding. We're going to be talking about Doom Patrol Season 2, Episode 6, Space Patrol, where a lot of stuff goes down, and Pete was so upset. He had to go buy himself a soft pretzel to feel better after the end of this episode.
Actually, Alex, I think it was more sort of a in case of fire break glass situation with this pretzel. Like, you had it on hand, and you were like, fuck, I need this pretzel.
Yeah. Yeah. Luckily, you know, when you buy a soft pretzel from Wawa, you get two. You get two in the bag. So hanging on to the second one for a special occasion, and it really saved my ass in this situation.
Like a romantic occasion? Walk me through how this works. You keep one pretzel in case things are getting hot and heavy at home.
Yeah. Can I get the lover's pretzels, please?
Yeah.
Oh, that's
they're all entwined.
Well, in this episode, brief bit of recap if it's been a while since you've watched the episode. So, dealing with the huge fallout at the end of the episode where Dorothy finally made a wish from the candle maker, Jane is covered in candle wax, the underground is in disarray, and everybody is dealing with that. And in the middle of Niles, Pete, you had to be happy about this. Niles did roll around looking for Dorothy quite a bit at the beginning of this episode.
He's trying.
In the middle of all of this, some old astronauts that he had sent back up into space before Larry was sent into space come back to visit Doom Manor. While that's going on, Dorothy steals their spaceship, goes to a make-believe planet that I think was supposed to be the moon or something like that.
I have so many questions. I thought it was the moon, and then it wasn't? Or is the side of the moon we haven't seen?
Yeah, we'll talk about that in a second. And Niles takes Cliff in a goat-powered spaceship to go get her back. Cliff does manage to bond with Dorothy for the first time ever, does manage to convince her to come back. But by the end of the episode, Cliff has been expelled out into space. So rip Cliff, that's it for him on the show. Meanwhile, back on Earth, Larry finds out that the cosmonaut of these three astronauts has a negative spirit of her own and was actually able to bond with the negative spirit and have a really happy, fun time up there. After all these years, he learns a lot of lessons from this cosmonaut and ultimately heads in an opposite direction by the end. Meanwhile, Rita is finding out just what's going on with the play with the Cloverton Players. Turns out they're doing a version of Our Town.
Our Town.
Mm-hmm. Which is based on the events of the beginning of the first season of Doom Patrol with the blob attack. So lots to unpack there. And finally, we got Cyborg, who is still off on his own with Ronnie, but discovers some surprising information about the implants that she got. They did, in fact, come from both Niles Calder and his own dad, Silas Stone. And so he tries to track that down as that plot gets deeper and more interesting. So, that all said, Pete, why don't we turn to you first, since you were so disturbed you had to take the ultimate step and eat a pretzel at the end of the episode.
They call it soft pretzel disturbed, Pete.
Yeah, soft pretzel disturbed.
SPD.
So when you have a shitty leader and, you know, like Cliff was like peak Cliff, like Cliff had a moment in space where he's just looking out and he's like, what are we all so mad at? Like, he was able to save the day with Dorothy. Like, he is Team Jane, yet he still got on the rocket ship to help the chief who he hates. Like, and then what happens? He's ejected into space. And I am just so freaking upset because it's this thing of like, oh, Niles Calder is an asshole, but he's also doing this all for his daughter. And like, go fuck yourself. This is way too, you know, far. Like, at this point, I want Jane to wake up and burn the whole fucking place to the ground because, like, fuck you. That was just, what the fuck? You can't eject Cliff into space. You just can't do that. He saved your daughter, you fucking piece of shit. Like,
that's a lot of cursing going on there. I'm just so upset. Cliff curses a lot, but tamp it down. This is a family show, all right?
Never said it was.
I just
Let me say, in response to that, I mean, Cliff did turn a corner in this episode, and in high Cliff fashion, he is punished immediately for it. I thought that it was a great arc for him. It finally made me back off of my Cliff is the true villain of this season, because he does. He finally, like, reckons with his anger and is like, you know, why are we fighting? He takes a look at the Earth and the like weird Tetris moon that they're on. And he does it in a, even if he ends up in the future episodes, like, it's part of a plan to do something.
No, you can't.
He does it in
a
pretty shitty way. Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'll tell you, I know you guys are kind of dancing it around in a little bit, but I know I've been pushing this a lot. I feel like Niles might be the villain of the show.
Oh, my God.
I'm just throwing that out there.
Oh, my God.
Wow. And you've had this theory all along? Because if this is true, then you're definitely the Niles of this podcast.
He definitely is. I mean, a lot of what this episode, I think, is driving home is any corners that Niles has turned in terms of being a better and more understanding person are thrown literally out of the window here in this episode. But also the way that he's treating Dorothy, where he's looking at her as a dangerous weapon. He's not actually being a good father to her at all. You touched on this a little bit the last episode, Justin, in terms of him going over the top with fatherhood but not understanding how to do it. But
Does it right at the beginning of this episode. He's walking in and just being like, Dorothy, let's do it. Like, he's playing dad as opposed to being a dad. And I think like you're saying, it's revealed later in the episode that it is an act.
Well, and I think what he is doing there is not trying to be a father, actually, but trying to treat her with kid gloves, trying to treat her as a literal child. And a theme that ran very nicely through here that is always a theme of the show, but I think they hit it particularly hard this episode, is about growing up. Like, we obviously get that with Dorothy and her conversation with the Candlemaker, where the Candlemaker says, you're growing up, I'm growing up too. But the same thing happens with everybody across the board here, where they're obviously, some of them are adults, but I think the same way, they need to mature. They need to think about these things in a more mature manner. And that's not what Niles is doing. It also drives home the connection between Dorothy and everybody else in Doom Manor, that he kept them trapped. He looked at them as weapons as well to keep hidden away from the world. He kept telling them it was for their own good, but it really wasn't at all.
Yeah, I mean, the Jane in particular, I thought it was a big growing up arc where she's reckoning with the death of baby doll and the fire lady. And she, like, is like, they're going to come back. Very much like a child understanding of death. Like, we don't have to let it go. We don't know how the rules work. We can just, like, and everyone else is, no, it's, we have to move on. And I think that's what her arc this season is. She's about to grapple with Miranda taking over as primary, and Jane's going to have to step up and become the one true Jane, I guess, to, like, not let herself become this, like, force of bad.
Well, to delve into it even a little bit further, and I think, like you're saying, it's a little obvious on the surface there, but their whole thing is about protecting the child. It's about protecting Kay. That's what all of these personalities
are
for.
And it turns out Kay is kind of a dick as well.
Kay is a child.
Yeah, well, Kay was like,
Kay
was like, listen, I'm sorry about what happened. That was bullshit. Help me out here. Can we do anything? And then Kay just, like, looks up from her puzzle and was like, that's your job. like, damn, like that's all you can say to somebody. They come to you, they're crying.
Well, they work like, for her. All I mean, the personalities are like sort of Kay's employees.
It's called delegating responsibility. That's what a really good manager does, Pete.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Go fuck yourselves. This episode drove me insane. Like, LT turned into Vin Diesel and all he cares about is family. He doesn't care about Lightman or anything else. Like, yeah. Fucking, you know, like, what is going on? Like, this is just insane. This episode goes off the fucking rails in a way that, I mean, the show does do amazing, crazy things. Like, but what the fuck, man?
Wait, this is just a lot to try to recenter you for a second, Pete. So the title of this episode was Space Patrol, and they went to space. Was that satifying?
I was excited for that because I was my God, we're going to space. This is crazy. What a crazy show. Space, no problem. But then all of a sudden.
Space, no problem. That's NASA's phrase. That should be NASA's slogan. Space, no problem.
But then all of a sudden, like, as soon as Niles got on the ship, very casually, and then the goat had it turned around. I was like, what the fuck is going on?
He's
like,
goat. Oh, interesting.
Well, like, what the fuck? How does a goat head power a fucking spaceship? All right, the show is weird.
Like, that's an evil goat right there.
Yeah, goats will eat anything. That's actually a great idea because you can give them anything as fuel for a spaceship. So really, a goat engine is the most efficient form of transportation we have.
A lot of the early space missions, you can see this in watching Apollo 13, they would just run a big string of tin cans up into space, and the goats would just eat up it Pac-Man style.
Wow. All right, so seriously, though, how does a thing turning around and then a goat head being there just explain, like, oh, yeah, we can go to space now in the show? Like,
well, Niall says he had to turn – science wasn't ready to go to space, so he had to turn to some dark magic, which is what he does. And I think that is big, going back to our first conversation here about Niles. He reveals himself here. He is play-acting as this team leader, as this father. But really, he's the same guy that was just doing whatever it takes to live forever so he can see his daughter grow up. Or whatever his next thing is, he has these sort of sociopathic tendencies where he's just going to do whatever he needs to do to get by, and he doesn't care about the consequences until later when he's like, oh, I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry for what I did.
Well, and I think the other aspect of it, getting back to this childhood thing, is everything in this episode, the way that it treated space, was incredibly like playing with toys. From the, I guess they're not cosmonauts, but the two guys saying their names over and over again and playing grab ass the entire time and running back and forth.
And they are the pioneers of the uncharted, a clear challengers of the unknown reference, which is cool.
Yes.
Classic comic book.
But you had them, the way that the spaceship comes down and just kind of lands on the yard was very cartoony. Then the whole thing with the goat head and the explanation there, same sort of thing.
There was no explanation. It was just
ludicrous. It's absolutely ludicrous. But it's like, yeah, I have a spaceship in the garage. Let's take my spaceship. And it's powered by a goat head. We'll go up to space. And it's the moon, but you can talk there. Don't worry about it. All of that stuff felt like play acting. Like, I don't think there's necessarily an explanation in canon for it necessarily coming, but at the same time, it all made sense with the theme of the episode. What were you going to say, Justin?
I was just going to say, when I was watching this episode and I was like, let's see, Jane takes an L this episode. Cliff, huge L this episode. I was like, Pete's not going to like this episode.
this is a two pretzel episode right here.
Exactly.
I did want to call out a couple of lines around that scene in the garage, though, because that was so much fun just when they go into space. Cliff saying, you had a fucking spaceship in the garage the whole time.
Yeah.
Very funny. The very offhand comment when they're about to go into space and he says, 30 years later, you couldn't invent me a working hand. That also very funny.
All fun.
And the last comment as they're blasting off where he says, of course, I'm fucking going into space.
Yeah.
I like this episode because I like Cliff's attitude here. I thought it was really good and fun to see.
I was having the best time with Cliff. I was like, this is the episode of Cliff. This new Cliff moving forward is going to be unbelievable. And then they just took him off the board, and all my hopes and dreams came crushing down. Like, I was going to make bracelets. Like, what would Cliff do? Like, I was really, like, you know.
But then you're like, he's gone in space. So yeah, forget that. Forget the merch.
I hope Cliff comes crashing down from space and then beats the fucking chief into a bloody pulp.
I think Cliff's going to be back. I'll just throw that out there. I mean,
you
I
don't know.
We'll see what I mean, I've watched that, but I don't know. Oh. I guess we'll see what happens.
Nice.
But regardless, I think like you don't eject one of the main characters into space. They're just not coming back.
Especially we'll when, like we're talking about, he just had this great redemptive moment. He had a great conversation heart to heart with Dorothy. They're at the.
The only guy who could have got Dorothy to come down off the moon or the. Yeah.
Well,
close to
it was
moon,
surprising to me. This
moon.
Is the one thing that felt a little creaky to me in the episode is the idea that Niles was like, no, Cliff, you have to do it. Given that Cliff has been like, fuck you, Dorothy, for five episodes so far at this point. So why do you think he specifically needed Cliff? Why did he specifically call on Cliff?
Because he's a robot that can walk around in space. That's why he needed Cliff.
I think that's right. And I think he probably needed time to figure out whatever his next scheme is. He and Dorothy just rocketing off by themselves so that she doesn't destroy the Earth, or he's going to go drop her off somewhere. Who knows? But I do think Cliff rose to the occasion. They're at the yoked jackalope's yoked grave. Mm-hmm. And I love Dorothy being like, it's the last piece of my mom. And then just they sort of have a conversation. You just cut to the shot of the two and then walking across the moonscape. Super sweet. And to your point, yeah. Alex, very storybook, very like end of a bedtime story.
Yeah. Very Little Prince.
But then it's just a fucking nightmare.
Yes,
and I recently read it in the native French, Alex. I don't know.
Native French.
Yeah. The original French.
Yes. What is it called? Actually, in French, you would know this because you read it that way all the time. What's
yes,
the actual
Le Petit Prince.
I don't think that's it.
Le Petit Prince is for French
and
for little.
What's the name of the author without looking it up real quick?
Saint-Exupéry.
Okay.
Jean-Paul Saint-Exupéry or something like that.
Okay, right. Something like that. Something French, I guess we'll find out. So yeah, the Cliff stuff is great. I agree with you.
Antoine de Saint-Exupéry.
Ah, there we go. Like we were talking about, all the stuff with Cliff was great. All the conversations were great. I loved, we touched on this earlier, but just him really actually getting literal perspective on it and seeing the Earth, and he has a line, wow, what are we all so angry about?
Yeah.
Which, it's good. It works for Cliff. Works really nicely. And unfortunately, rip Cliff, he's dead now.
But also, that's what the light beam was, the Russian
negative
light beam. Yeah, the Moscow one was saying was that she was saying that, like, sometimes you just need perspective. I recommend space because it is like, you know, you're out there, you're floating around, you're looking at a little ball, and it doesn't, you know, problems don't seem so big. But it's just one of those things where Cliff got to kind of have that perspective change and really kind of had that moment of, like, you know, letting go of his anger. And it was really powerful moment. And all for nothing, because now he's going to come back angrier than ever. I mean, holy shit. Everybody's in trouble.
Well, I like what you're saying about the cosmonaut, because a lot of my breakups were, I just need some space. And I think a lot of my exes ended up journeying. I'm taking them at their word. I think they headed up to space.
I had a question for you guys. Since it seems like the cosmonaut went on very similar adventures to the Doom Patrol, and at the beginning of Doom Patrol, they had a donkey, do you think the cosmonaut had a Moscow mule?
Oh, boy. Wow.
My God.
A lot of hard lifting for that fucking dad joke at the end, bro.
Alex,
all right, I
that's
retire.
A fucking
I'm
bench pressing.
That's it. That's
Alex.
The peak.
That's how Alex is getting yoked. Is lifting the material to get to that joke.
Let's talk
and
about
was,
the big,
real quick. I was with you, Alex, except you mispronounced the word donkey.
The donkey does get a shout out in this episode. From the play.
Yeah, now I'm wondering what they call Shrek in Russia, but I guess we can find that out. You're talking
I don't think they allow that movie in other countries.
Interesting. It's what the, is Shrek the, in Russian?
The farting. They don't really appreciate all the farting.
All right, why don't we go over and talk about Vic then?
I don't know how to pronounce that, but it looks like Wupek.
Cool.
Yeah,
that's cool. Good. Fun next time you're in Russia, you can hop over and just
Wupek.
I think it's pronounced
Wupek. Please.
Should we talk about Rita's?
I think we can still talk a little bit about. We pretty much skip past the Larry stuff, like we touched on a little bit. But while we're there. I really like this plot line as well. I thought it was a big surprise having another negative spirit come down. I like the fact that it didn't really drive Larry into a rage, but made him reflect more, like a lot of the other characters in this episode, where he realized he's been doing it wrong, but she is nice enough and balanced enough that she's able to coach him to this place where he realizes what he actually needs.
I mean, there is a point where Alti goes, listen, I'm sorry. I'm kind of a pill. I apologize. You know what I mean? Like, he kind of apologizes for his mopey attitude. But then later is just like, listen, but my son killed himself and it's tearing me apart inside. So, like, get out of here with all your enlightened talk, you know?
Well, and I think we've talked about this a little bit. Like, the thing holding Larry back is his self-hatred and his inability to sort of, like, just be where he is. He's always looking back and has so many regrets. Yeah. And the moment when she's like, yeah, I got it. 5 years in space, got to sort of figure it out, the whole negative spirit thing. He's like, 5 years? You figured this out in 5 years? Okay. Okay. It's like if you were putting together some IKEA furniture and you're like, oh, you're done? I'm just getting the screws out of the back. Yeah. Oh, you're done. You're just all done. Oh, well, that's a beautiful bookshelf. I guess I'll just throw mine away.
Well, not to poke the bear again, but I am curious, Pete. I thought the conclusion that he needs to go back to his family and really actually settle things versus just running away was a good one and a positive one. It sounds though you didn't like that.
Well, no, because he was like, first off, let me address what you said. Yes, I agree. That is a good choice for him to be like, my family is really torn apart and me not being there has killed them. And then this whole thing was awful. Maybe there's something I can do. I mean, that's a great position for him to be in. But the way he was just kind of like, I'm angry. I'm, you know what I mean? Like, I'm not going to listen to all this stuff that is about me and my life being coming together and being one so we can kind of move better, you know, throughout the world. And he was just like, there's a way to be like, hey, thank you. That is smart. And I want to get there someday. First, I kind of got to deal with some family stuff. You know what I mean? That would have been a great way to do it. But the way he was like, no, my family, I'm Vin Diesel now. And that's all that matters to me is my fucking family. So go fuck yourself and your, you know, enlightenment.
It's hard to tell if you like Vin Diesel here or you don't.
That's Vin Diesel is not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about his lack of growth. Pete.
Just answer, so you know, you're question. Screaming his name if you're not talking about
yeah,
him.
Yeah, but that's just it's.
Which side are you on? Are you on the Vin Diesel side or the Rock side of this feud, Pete?
This could tear Pete apart. Yeah. Open some more pretzels. You got a big question on your hands, Pete.
I'm going to have to eat some more soft pretzels.
Grumble, grumble, Pete. I mean, I sort of have issue with Larry's choice here for a different reason. It feels like, like, if he still feels pain about his family, then yes, he has to go deal with it. But I think the family he needs to fix is the Doom Patrol. He needs to get them all together, so because they are the people that take care of each other. Hmm. His family, he feels guilt toward them, but it's pretty clear the anger that his family has is off the charts. They almost got him captured by the government. So it's like,
so you're saying that he shouldn't be concentrating on the family he has, like how Vin Diesel focuses on John Cena's character in the last Fast and the Furious movie, his actual family, his actual brother, and instead he should focus on the family he's found, the Doom Patrol, like Vin Diesel does with his family mostly in the Fast and Furious movies.
Yeah, I guess I'm more of a late period Fast Furious guy.
Wow, that's the wrong choice. why don't we talk about Rita, as you mentioned earlier, because she has this fun plot ride happening with the local play.
And you want to talk about someone who's evolved. Like, Rita held it together the whole time. It's like she's sat through that awful play about them where they were taking shots at her the whole time. Didn't lose her face once. Even, like, confronted that awful understudy. Still held it together. I mean, you want to talk about growth as a character, Rita is killing it.
This was such a fun little subplot. I hope we get to see this play at some point this season. I loved that she gets totally just like dragged by this young actress, full psych breakdown. And then her line at the end, well, I found my nemesis. That was great.
Yeah, just great.
And then just the jokes of what we talk about when we talk about the donkey, the like very much poking fun at like the theater world, which I think, as you know, I'm a classically trained actor, so that's very much in my...
Oh boy.
One of my absolute favorite, a terrible thing to bring up here, but I thought it was a perfect reference. The director very casually mentioning, thinking about it as our Laramie project, which is something like, don't do that. But very, very fun. And I also just love the reversal joke there of like, you expect this ditzy actress to come up to Rita and be like, oh, I don't know, she's like a crazy blob. And then, like you mentioned, she wrecks Rita, like gets her directly to the core, says out loud everything that's been going on in the background for the past couple of episodes. So funny, so fun.
And that's what happens when you, as an actor, really do the homework. You know, really put the time in to do the research. You guys know what I'm talking about, right?
I do. I don't know if you remember, I did this intro about the Brisbane death metal scene, and I really delved very heavily into that. So same sort of
thing. And Pete, you were in a community theater production of Whippeck, right? You played Donkey.
That's right. And it's pronounced whoop.
All right, we didn't touch on Cyborg that much, so why don't we jump over to him and what's going on with him. Mostly, he's in bed with Roddy this episode, just having a nice time scanning each other and stuff. And
been there.
Yeah, good times, good times.
The old, hey, let me see inside of you.
Now,
smooth, Vic, real smooth.
Justin, I believe you mentioned last episode that you were starting to get a little suspicious of Ronnie. How do you feel about her this episode?
More suspicious. It feels like, and I don't want to be like some sort of doubter when it comes to a romance or a love, if that's what they want to call it. But I don't know. It feels to me like she's playing him and is trying to get to the bottom because she's like she said, she's dying. So she's up against it. And maybe she did the research and she's like, this guy's a way I can get access to the people that made the parts that are killing me. I need to do this.
Also, like getting yourself hugely in debt and then thinking that when you're dead, it just goes away is, so you know, that goes to other family members. I mean, that's just, you know, that's not a smart way to go about things.
Well, I will say on that front, first of all, it seems like she doesn't really have any family members. It's just her. So that's not necessarily a worry on her part. But I also liked it. It seemed like in the middle of an otherwise very goofy episode, a pretty earnest discussion of healthcare and the immense costs that are going to hit through the lens, obviously, of superheroics and cyborg implants and all of these other things. But yeah, I know you're right, Pete, but at the same time, I did like that injection of realism there. And I think ultimately, like what we've talked about with Ronnie, whatever her ultimate goal is, that's what she's bringing to Cyborg is he's been on this, I'm going to be a superhero, I'm going to be in the JLA. And first season was a lot about making him confront the fact that he's suppressed the fact that he feels a little bit like a monster inside and coming to grips with that. This one is making him come to the grips with the fact that the world is not black and white. I know we talked around that a lot, but I think it's the same thing with the healthcare discussion where he's like, oh, it's cool, we'll solve it. And she's like, no, I do not have a rich scientist father with war contracts and army contracts and things. I can't fix this. I'm screwed for the rest of my life.
And then they go to Silas, and he's like, cool that you have a girlfriend, nice, but otherwise not interested.
Well, it was adorable. That's the first time we saw the dad. Well, not the first time, but the dad was really happy for the son. I mean, he was just like, what? This is for a girl? Like, it was a little different side than the mean dad who's always just saying no to him. So I'm glad we got a little kind of like father-son connection moment there. So it's not always like my evil dad who shoots down all my plans. I think that I like forward movement with their relationship. I think it's a good kind of way for Vic to kind of explore different ideas and see how other people live. So I think it's great for the character.
And I mean, just to touch on what you just said, Pete, I agree with you about Silas. I do think if he keeps showing up, we need to see some other sort of scene with him because it is a lot of them being like, hey, can you help out? And be like, well, nope.
Nope.
And that's it. Yeah. So next time we see him, I want to see him contribute in some way or push the plot forward in some way instead of just being this hurdle that they need to get over.
Yeah, he has real boners to bone energy.
You know, well, I think it seems like you guys are just being
I don't know what you're talking about.
Overly
boners to bone? Pete, no. Boners to Bone.
Are you being serious right now?
Growing Pains, the neighbor, Boner, comes over. Uh-huh. That's what energy Silas has. He just pops over, doesn't help, and then leaves.
I didn't know that was a saying. So
that's not a saying. But
did they say this on Growing Pains?
That was his name, was Boner.
Yeah, but did they say Boners to Bones?
Boner Stabone was his name.
Oh, Stabone is his last
name. Oh, you were saying Boners Stabone. I thought you were saying Boners to Bone.
I thought you were saying Boners to
like
Bone.
Like Boners Bone. Like, yeah. Oh, man. Wow.
Whew.
That was a real emotional discussion. We went out there.
What a good discussion about this.
Boners got a bone. Right,
I just think you guys are upset because, like, mostly a dad's job is just to be like, no, you can't do that. You know what I mean? Like, that's, you know, a lot.
I got bad news for you, Pete. It's not what the job is. That is not what the job is.
You're like, hey, listen, kid, that's a horrible idea. Put that knife down. Like, you did your job. You're a dad. You were like, nope, that's not good.
Man, I feel like you have to work harder as a dad to your cat than that, Pete. So wait till you...
Any other moments from the episode that you guys want to talk about?
Well, I do think we've sort of talked a little bit about Jane, but we get a lot of, like, sort of intense scenes here with Jane really sort of facing sort of who she is and who she's becoming. We get a very, like, CW progression where all the characters are walking to the well at the end to some, like, really intense Evanescence-esque pop music. And then they meet Miranda. And it feels like Miranda's trying to, like, get more people in the well so that she can.
Yeah, that's like a horrible idea. Like, just trusting the well lady. Has no one seen a horror movie? Like, you never trust somebody who just is fresh out of a well. You got to let that sit a little bit to see what that turns into before you started trusting a well person.
Interesting take. What have you taken out of a well that later you were like, oh, good. It is good.
You're right. So nothing good ever comes out of a well. I'm surprised you say that.
Except for water, Pete. Water is good.
Your well water was not good enough. You're losing teeth like crazy.
Here's my question about well water, because I've never actually used a well to get water. Isn't that water, like, probably kind of gross?
Like, yeah, there's monsters in there.
But I wasn't going to go that far.
Water doesn't get super moldy. I mean, an open air well where stuff goes in, but I got bad news for you. A lot of water comes from the ground. And touches dirt. It's not like
water,
it just comes
the
out.
The water comes from bottles.
I have horrible news for you. As I've said on this podcast, because I grew up on well water, but it wasn't me going and getting a bucket and
that's
pouring it into the
like.
Bathtub.
That's what it seems like.
No,
did you have to get one of those kind of like bars that go all the way across and you had two buckets on each side so you could carry it? Okay.
Yeah, that's where
Saint Exupéry used to sit down and have a nice Evian every morning.
He would talk a baguette with butter, cheese, ham, jambon.
I do think it was very like Cochon. I was very happy.
Cordichon.
I was very happy that Jane was like, "Hey guys, we can't just go and throw in bodies down the well. That doesn't seem like a good idea."
Poison the water.
But Miranda just shows up, and then everybody's cool with it because, like, they voted one time. And how come Jane didn't get to be in on the vote? That's cold, man.
That's why it's important to vote. Maybe she wasn't registered.
Oh, that's a great point. Jane is clearly on the outs with everybody. I think that's the reason they don't care about any of her opinions. But I'll tell you what, I know you shot this down earlier, Justin, but I think she's kind of right. Like, they don't know the rules of this. They don't know that these people might come back. Like, that was my immediate thought when Baby Doll died, is she's kind of a thought construct, right? So there's no reason that you can't bring her back in some way. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. I honestly don't remember how this goes, this particular plot line. So I do wonder if they are able to bring them back in some way or if these personalities are permanently gone.
Yeah. Well, the way they've introduced it, it feels like there'll be something to that. And I think we're actually going to get not nice versions of Baby Doll and Fire Lady, who will be on Miranda's side, is my prediction.
Ooh. Because once they've gone in the well, you're on the team well. All right.
You're team well, exactly.
Team well water.
Team well water. That's my team. A couple other things in the episode. Cliff bringing the finger and then putting in the freezer.
Yeah,
and he's like, hang tight, little guy. I don't know if that's how making a finger attach works, but sure.
It's hilarious.
I feel like that's definitely going to come back later at some point, right?
Yes, yeah. We had a whole episode called Finger Patrol. Yeah. I loved the whole, like, the super sci-fi thing of spores that got rid of, that killed the other two challengers of the unknown dudes. And I love when they're burying them. She's like, oh, and don't eat the fruit trees that grow here. It's full of dead body spores.
They were adorable, though, as they were being buried alive.
And, I mean, as much as Dorothy feels like, you know, she maybe has done her damage, the Candlemaker conversation she has with him in a classic The Footprints on the Beach situation, which I know, something we all talk about. She mentions, you know, a lot more words now. It seems like gaining in power. And I think the Candlemaker will end up being the villain of this season. I think.
Two other cliff. Oh, go ahead, Pete.
I was just going to say, I really like the LT Rita moment where LT's like, so community theater, huh? She's like, yeah. You know what? You know, if doing for the love, I thought that was great. You know, LT, it seemed like maybe he was going to take a couple jabs at it, but was pretty cool about it.
I really liked her line back. They're very well reviewed in the Cloverton Bugle.
Yeah.
I love just this very background way they're fleshing out the town of Cloverton. Like, it's not much. It's just little details, but it's very fun every time they mention it because silly name for town. Two Cliff lines I wanted to mention that happened pretty close in a row. When Cliff at the beginning of the episode is looking for Dorothy and Baby Doll, calling out any pigtailed pains in the asses down here. That was fun. And then he discovers Jade, brings it up. Niles explains everything that's going on, and then they hear a sound outside. And as Niles is running outside, Cliff says, "Is it Dorothy playing dress up with Rita's skin?"
Yeah. Great. Banger Cliff episode, RIP. Wish we could have him back, but he's gone.
Rest in peace, Cliff, the greatest character on the show. I mean, well, Cliff was right.
About what specifically?
About the chief. About everything, you know.
Great. This is a good transition to talk about who is most doomed this episode. Pete, I'll kick it over to you. I feel like
Cliff is most doomed. He got launched into space. But I tell you, if he comes back, do you know who's most doomed? Fucking Chief, man. You're going down, Chief. I can't wait to see your end. That's the only reason I'm watching now is to see you die.
Niles revealing himself as truly not willing to move past mistakes that he's made and just continuing to make them in the same vein, I think means that he is eventually going to be doomed.
Well, you think about it. If we kill Niles, all the problems are gone. I mean, it's basically the Doom Patrol.
Are you on the Doom Patrol in your mind?
No, three of us. If the three of us kill Niles, I'll tell you what, there's no evidence that could be traced back to us. No audio evidence.
No. Well, last season you were like, we have to kill Niles, and we ran that mission and killed the fictional character Niles Crane from Frasier, and everyone's mad at us about that. So let's at least get the mission right this time.
Okay. I'm just saying, you know, then we can just, everybody can be cool with Dorothy and it'll be fine.
I agree with both of your guys' answers, but just to throw out a third one, I'm going to say Dorothy is in a pretty bad place at the end of this episode. I think she is going to be okay because, like you mentioned, she has the overpowered Candlemaker at her beck and call. But there's this one moment towards the end where Niles makes Dorothy promise she'll never make a wish again. Cliff says, "Oh, Christ, that's sad," which it really is, just the idea of like, never hope or dream for anything ever again in your life. And whatever Niles is going to do with Dorothy, it almost feels like some sort of final solution to take care of her, to end her for good, for the better of humanity. So we'll have to see how it turns out. But my point being, she's not in a great place here.
Yeah.
And that is it. If you would like support our podcast, patreon.com/comicbookclub. Also, we do a live show every Tuesday night at 7 p.m. to Crowdcast and YouTube. Come hang out. We would love to chat with you about Doom Patrol, iTunes, Android, Spotify, Stitcher, or the app of your choice to subscribe, listen, and follow the show at Comic Book Live on Twitter, comicbookclublive.com for this podcast and many more. And before we go, a piece of advice for Pete LePage.
Apparently, you can't trust anybody. Because the chief's just going to fucking kick you out of the fucking spaceship after you say
that. This is a piece of advice you're giving people.
Don't trust the chief. My therapist says some pretty intense things. Don't trust anybody. Great lesson, Pete. I got to go because Boner's got a bone.
No, I'm talking about Boner Saint the Bone.
Boner Saint Bone.
That was the guy who did the Russian voice in Whippack.
Ready for a career in behavioral health? Earn your online degree at Herzing University. Choose from health and human services, psychology, or social work programs. Gain the skills to work, coordinate, and manage nonprofits. Secure a bachelor's in psychology to study mental health or advance your social work career through our online Masters of Social Work. Let us help you become a social change agent. Your future starts now at Herzing University. Text HEALTH to 85109. That's HEALTH to 85109. Or visit herzing.edu.